Clap, clap, clap. That's what we do. Clap your hands when you're through. I literally have the Elmo potty song stuck in my head. I swear to God. Like, today I think I've had it stuck in my head 20 times.
Okay, clap and then let's have this conversation.
I'm not talking about my Elmo potty.
Yeah, that's what people want to hear.
1, 2, 3.
Wow. Hank, did you hear that clap?
That's a good clap.
That was a good one. So, hi, Erica.
Hi. Okay, but this has, I'm not, this isn't going to go into someone's episode because it's really weird. But earlier, I forgot that it was, because, you know, I have like weird song stuff. I had the Elmo Potty song stuck in my head, but I couldn't remember that it was the Elmo Potty song. And I was just using the theme song.
For what?
I don't know. We were in the mall. And I
Oh, had, this was just now.
Yes.
Oh.
But it didn't hit me until just now that it was the Elmo potty song.
It's the wiping your hands, right?
Drying your hands. That's what you do. Wipe your hands when you are
through.
And then dry your hand. Anyway, I didn't know what it was. And I'm like, why is this stuck in my head? And I thought it was a Miss Rachel thing.
Oh, no.
And then it just hit me like 10 seconds ago.
That it's Elmo.
Yeah, Elmo that potty. Made me really sad. Okay.
Anyway. That's the soundtrack to your life now?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, should we share with everyone where we are?
So, we are in San Jose, yeah. California, and we took a plane ride, airplane ride. We went on an airplane yesterday to fly to San Jose, and I had this trip planned for like a month, but you came very last minute.
Yeah, basically, I don't even know when this is going to go out, but essentially I got like not the best news at my last scan. And so I was just like feeling sort of burnt out and like I just needed to get away and like have a little break. And so I said to Erica, like, hey, want some company on your trip to San Jose? And she's like, no, like it's fairly fine. I'm like, no, I'm coming.
I'm like, okay, you're coming.
Yeah, I just pushed my way in and I said, I'm coming. And so we're here because Erica's actually filming a super amazing course for parents who have to terminate for medical reasons. And she recorded all of it today. And
it was actually very helpful that
excited
you were here because you were my fill-in to get good shots. You fixed my hair. You told me when I needed to redo things.
Yeah, it was a really good day. Long day, but a good day.
We got food together. We walked.
Yeah. And we were just on our way back walking. We were having like a little moment where we were like, this was really fun.
I hope we have more trips.
Yeah.
I hope it's like our, like it's not just San Jose.
Yeah. Like we don't want San Jose to like be it, you know, like we're meant for bigger, better things. The world is our oyster.
And then we were talking about where did that come from? The world is our oyster, because the oyster only has one pearl. It's not like you open an oyster and
like it could be anything.
It's like very much not endless possibilities.
No. It's very much either it's a pearl or
it's not a pearl. And then I looked up online and found out there's like some Shakespearean origin to the term the world is your oyster.
Doesn't really make sense though.
It didn't make sense to me because I don't understand like old English.
Shakespearean English. Yeah. Anyways, if anyone has any thoughts on the world is your oyster
and how it went from you open an oyster and there's a pearl to endless possibilities, I would really love to understand.
Yeah, we're just trying to understand these colloquial terms.
But San Jose was our oyster pearl.
It was. I feel like we made the most of San Jose. We did the most we could in San Jose.
We squeezed all the lemon juice.
Exactly, out of San Jose. So yeah, it was really fun. And now we're here reflecting on what we felt was so far one of our favorite episodes to film and record. We got to talk to someone who we were really, really, really close with growing up. She actually lived on the same street as us, like just around the corner. So
Grief Street lives up to its name.
Yeah, like we had a lot of people in our life that lived on our street growing up, and we just had like this great group of friends. And we lost touch with Era, who is our guest, after middle school because we all went to different schools. And I always sort of like thought about that relationship and wondered about it. Like, I wonder what happened. Did it just have like a natural sort of fizzle out? Was it that we were at different schools? Was it that maybe something happened and like we weren't supportive enough or like caring enough or kind right. enough? Like, I don't know.
And I mean, air answers that question for yeah. us, but Jordy and I were talking that we were kind of nervous about going into this episode because of that factor of, did we do something to interfere with the relationship in a negative way? Mm-hmm. And also because of Era's transition, we wanted to make sure that we were supportive of her
yeah.
well before the transition happened.
Yeah, like it's not something like, you know, teenagers can be assholes.
And we were.
And we could be assholes sometimes. And
well, not we could be. We were.
And so, yeah, it was just one of those things where I was trying to reflect back and it's been so many years. I like couldn't really remember well what went down. But you'll hear in the episode, we actually do ask that sort of hard question Erica asks it. And I was really grateful that she did because I feel like it was actually a beautiful moment.
It was. Getting back to like us being assholes though, I just feel like I have to justify that. What I mean by that is Jordy broke up with one of her boyfriends over LiveJournal. And we discovered that like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
That seemed like an asshole move.
It like definitely wasn't nice to break up with someone on a public forum.
Yeah. And
but that's like what you did, right? In like sixth grade.
Yeah, that's what you did. But we didn't really have too many more asshole moments than that.
No, that was probably pinnacle, not being so nice.
Right.
But that's just, you know, when you're a teenager, you're just figuring it out. You're figuring it out.
Kind of like the way I was trying to figure out, should I be a secretary? And I don't know. I had this weird thing where I would like to be like my mother and make contracts for people and keep relics of things. And
you'll get a glimpse at some of these things in the episode. It's just hilarious the things Erica has held on to all these years.
It makes me question myself.
I love it. And you know what? Era loved it too. Era
did
was like,
she, or did she think I was really wacky?
I mean, I think it was a combination of both. She'll have to let us know, but I think she had fun with it.
Yeah.
I think it was a lot of fun.
Okay, well, one relic that you will not see in this episode, but is maybe worth noting, is that I would make contracts for my friends and their boyfriends. And I still to this day have Jordy's contract with her first boyfriend in fourth grade.
Yeah.
And it said, you are now officially boyfriend and girlfriend. They signed. You will not like anyone else.
Ever.
They signed. Ever again. They signed.
And like nobody asked Erica to make these contracts. I just want to be clear about that.
Here's the thing. Why did you sign it?
I don't know. You remember? Seemed like you had a lot of authority and power. You know, you had a contract.
Do you remember?
You had a multicolored pencil and I couldn't say no.
Where you're like, this is a good idea.
I was like, I guess like this is what people do in fourth grade.
And I think I thought that too. This is what people do when they start. This is why I didn't date for many years.
Yeah. Like when people date, they date forever, even if they're nine.
And so therefore I cannot date. And people probably saw what I was doing and did not want to date me. Anyway,
I don't think that's true.
Okay. Well,
people were fans.
My multicolored pencil contracts. Maybe yeah. You'll get a picture soon.
Yeah. We'll have to find a picture of one of those because those were really funny. And yeah, you were just always like in the know, you know, you just yeah. were always up in everyone's business.
And you'll see that I was between Jordy and Era. And this is just a very sweet episode with many emotions. We laughed a lot. There were moments of sadness and mm-hmm. grief. There were just a lot of complexities to things that I actually learned a lot as well.
Yeah, I learned so much in this episode. I think Era has really been able to use her experience to not only help others who are going through transitions, but also in advocacy work for the trans community. I mean, she's living in Texas, which is, as we know, not the most friendly state to pretty much anyone. But
we don't want to talk too much because we want to let you get into this episode. But please enjoy this episode with Era Steinfeld, a member of the trans community living in Austin, Texas, and
our childhood friend
doing really amazing work and providing a lot of community and support for those around her.
Yeah.
Enjoy.
Welcome to Grief Street. And I was thinking maybe if you, Eric, could share just like your story of how you, I mean, know us, because I think it could be helpful. I feel like we've go way, way back. Well, you and Jordy go really, really way back. Yeah. So can you just give an intro of who you are and then how we all know each other?
Yeah. My name is Era. I use she, her pronouns. I currently live in Austin, Texas, where the humidity levels are rising very rapidly now that it is mid, end of April. And yeah, I met Jordy in preschool and met Erica in middle school. And, we, for the majority of our lives at that age, all lived, really close to each other. I lived just like a block away from the two of you. And yeah, I'm happy to be here and like catch up and have all of the humans that we are now like meet each other in real time.
I feel like it's so rare to meet childhood friends and then be able to reconnect years and years later. And it's just, I'm so grateful for that.
Me too. And I was going to say, like, what an idyllic like neighborhood situation, you know, to like live in a neighborhood where there's like an elementary school right around the corner, and then all the kids that you're friends with live in the same neighborhood. I mean, that was kind of a dream. And I feel like that's not a thing anymore, but maybe it is. But I just thought that was like the coolest way to grow up, was just like be able to walk to each other's houses and like,
yeah.
Yeah, just so fun.
Yeah, I feel like, I mean, I don't have kids and I live in an apartment, so it's just a very whole different setup that I have. But it is, there is like our downstairs neighbors, there's like an older, I want to say maybe she's like 10 or 11, yeah. And she kind of like runs all of the kids in this apartment complex. So like there is the next generation of that happening. And it's really cute. And she like bosses them all around and makes them play her games.
Yes, we love her.
yeah, we love her. I don't know what her name is, but she's amazing. So it is happening. It is happening. But,
that makes me so happy. Yeah.
I feel like, especially as a trans adult, a lot of the relationships that I had when I was younger sort of like, either like the needle was taken off the record and then never put back on, or like some stuff went down or whatever it is. And so being able to reconnect with y'all and like, I don't know, just like see y'all's journey on social media and have you see my journey on social media and have that as a way to be like, okay, we still know what's going on, but we haven't like connected.
I know. I feel like I've been watching and like cheerleading you on from the sidelines. Aww. And I always am so happy when I see things about you. And I have so many, when I think of my childhood, you're just such an important player in that. Aww. Like you're just, I mean, I have this one really funny memory of, I mean, I think you probably instilled my love for Hot Cheetos, which is like a lot, which is like a lot to say because I'm still obsessed.
I think I remember like your sister really loved them, right, Era?
Yeah, my sister was obsessed, and I think like she made me obsessed. But yeah,
you made Erica obsessed.
Yeah, my sister's Facebook profile picture for forever was like her in a bathtub with all of her clothes on, just like covered in bags of Hot Cheetos.
Oh, that's like really my dream. And I remember, I think this was you. You used to microwave an empty bag of Hot Cheetos and make them mini sized.
What?
No.
Okay. Well, this is a memory I have, and you can, okay. I'm going to prove it somehow. They're
who let us do that?
Microwave an empty bag of Hot Cheetos.
Yeah, okay. And then it makes it micro sized.
Oh my gosh. You know what? I have a vague memory. It's like a shrinky dink or whatever those things were called.
I definitely remember doing shrinky dinks, but not with food. Hot Cheetos.
Okay, well, yeah, I mean, none of the Hot Cheetos were in there. And then I remember it was Passover and you had to put all the Hot Cheetos away.
Oh, yeah.
And that was like a really sad week.
So yeah, Passover, like growing up, I mean, it still does because that's how time works. It like usually falls around my birthday. And so there were birthdays growing up where like, you know, when we're in elementary school and I guess part of middle school, it's like, well, let's bring cupcakes for the class or like whatever. Right. But I would have to bring the coconut macaroons. So sad. And like, and I hated those. And I don't know if I hated them because I couldn't have cupcakes or if I didn't like the taste of them, but the like, it's scarred for me in my childhood. And I remember 1 year having to bring like lollipops. Oh. So I was like, no macaroons. And my mom was like, okay, what about Tootsie Rolls? And I was like,
shout out to your mom for getting creative or like really at least trying. Now we have all the like gluten free and like there would be so many options today. But back then in the 90s, yeah. Slim pickings.
Yeah. Not a lot of allergen free foods.
Yeah, exactly. Everything had carbs in it. So
exactly.
It was an option. I wanted to touch on something that you said really quickly. You said like you feel like some of the relationships that you've had in your life, it's like the pin has been like taken off the record. And sometimes it gets put back on and sometimes it doesn't. And I'm curious if you can tell us a little bit more about what those kinds of relationships look like on both ends of the spectrum.
Yeah, totally. I think a part of this is just like entering different life phases and things, but the person that I was up and through like the end of undergraduate at Berkeley, like, and the person who was like going through all of those early stages of transition and starting out socially transitioning, a lot of that is sort of like moving away, or at least for me, it was a conscious moving away from, but not necessarily knowing what I was going towards. And in that moving away from, I had to, or ended up, or did sort of like have to make the choice to like only take with me the relationships that were helping me on that path. And if people weren't down for that, then I wasn't down for that. And so the person that I was, one example is like the person I was dating right before I met my now husband. He had like very recently come out as queer and our relationship was going really well. And for me, sort of all of a sudden, I was like, okay, I'm having all these feelings. Like, what do I do?
Yeah.
And he was like, I don't know if I can like do this with you, kind of. And so, you know, in order for him to like really explore his own queerness and in order for me to explore my gender, we had to separate and just like become independent, different people. And then sort of like how I walk my mom's dog and like walk by y'all's childhood houses, I would ride the train from San Francisco into Oakland to get to work. And I would see his house was right by the station. So I would literally like train by his bedroom window every day.
Which is
brutal. Really wild. And then he was on a billboard right across from my work.
You can't make this shit up.
No, it was that time was wild.
You can't escape.
Yeah. And then a lot of the relationships I had specifically with men in middle school and high school, I've like come back to a lot of those relationships. But yeah, I had to sort of leave a lot of relationships behind in order to become myself.
Yeah.
And then in the last whatever it's been, like almost a decade, I've like returned to some of those relationships and I'm like, hey, it's me.
I'm curious too, like sitting here and as you're talking about this, I was thinking, well, when did we start losing a little bit of touch and how, I mean, not to like put you on the spot, but I'm just curious if you could speak to like how, when do you feel like, how do our relationships, if me and Jordy.
Yeah, like play into that.
Yeah.
I mean, I think our relationship sort of shifted when we stopped going to school together. And, you know, in high school, like, at least in the Valley or with us in our socioeconomic status, like, we got cars. We were all, like, doing our own things. Our middle school that we went to was, like, 2.5 blocks away from our homes.
Yeah, we would walk there together.
Yeah. But our high schools were all in different areas. And so then we all made friends and connections in different areas. And for me, that was more a matter of spending the time around the people I'm physically around. And less about that, like, intentional shift away from people, if that makes sense.
That does make sense. And I think you're describing what happens to a lot of kids when they start to go to different schools, is like you just assimilate into the social dynamics of wherever you are because you want to fit in and make friends and, you know, feel good where you are. And so sometimes those other relationships fall by the wayside. But I'm glad Erica asked, because I always think about that. I'm like, when did that relationship, like, sort of fizzle out? Because it never felt like I don't know, for me at least, it never felt like there was an event or something that happened or, like, hurt feelings. And I could be totally misremembering, but that I don't remember it that way. So I was like, what happened there? Because we were so close for so long and lived in the same neighborhood. It, like, could have been easy maybe to stay in touch, but it didn't happen. And I always, like, wondered about that.
I think it was also, like, you know, I am still close with Jake Wexler. And I think a part of that is, like, our moms are really close.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and totally. So if our, you know, at that age before we're driving, when we're not in the same school, it's like we're seeing people our parents are close with because they're the ones right. taking us places. Right. And so I think there's a part of that. But and we can keep this in if you want. I have just a couple of funny stories about the old days.
Okay, let's hear it. I would love, because we also found some relics.
Too.
And if you don't want this in here, it does not have to be, but
I do have some relics to show you.
Ridiculous.
I am super excited. Okay, so, like, as now a trans person, I'm in the stage of my selfhood, personhood, whatever it is, that's like, bring on the old stuff. Mm-hmm. There's, like, a specific time of my 20s that I'm like, let's not look at that. But that's sure. obviously, like, not relevant to.
We weren't really there. So
yeah, the stories for that. Okay, the first story I have is that
I'm scared.
No, don't be scared. This is more of a Jordy story.
Okay, great. I kind of figured.
I was at my parents' house recently, and, like, I still had, like, the desk I had through all of, like, elementary school, middle, and high schools, like, in that room. And my parents wanted to get me a queen size bed because my husband and I share, like, a little bed when we're there. And I'm like, we're in our 30s. So she was like, clean out, like, take everything out of this desk. And for so long, I was like, just throw the whole thing away. And she was like, no, there's, like, relics in here. Yes. And so one of the relics was from you, Jordy, and it was a very, very heartfelt note that you had written me when I was going through. So, like, we talked about, like, the gender stuff, but, like, in middle school, I was going through this, like, am I gay or not?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And if I look back, probably a lot of that was also gender stuff. I just, like, didn't know or didn't have the language then. Sure. And
it wasn't talked about the way it is today.
No, not at all.
Slightest.
But, like, looking back, I'm like, all my friends were girls. And, like, yeah. I don't know, their signals.
For sure.
But you had wrote me a letter, and it was like, I love you. Like, I'll always love you. Like, whoever you are. Like, aww. It could have been aww. Written to, like, a trans person coming out, but, like, that wasn't what it was then. But it was like,
yeah.
I'll be here. Like, whatever you need. And you were like, if you want to borrow my clothes,
oh my,
like,
God, Jordy.
You can do that.
That's so sweet.
And so I'm like, okay, gender stuff was, like, definitely at play. We just, like, didn't know the terms.
Yeah.
And you had passed it to me in class.
Like, honestly, and the reason, so ridiculous.
I know. The reason I know that is because I had written back on it and it was folded. And, okay, you wrote, like, a page, turn the page, half a page. And I wrote, thanks, love you. like totally it. Ignored
well, I was
it.
Probably like fully pressing on stuff that you were like, what is happening? I'm not ready to touch that yet.
I don't even know. I don't even know. I also, this is just a total side note, but I found this letter that in at Adot.Ariel they had us write letters to God or something.
Oh, that sounds on brand.
It sounds on brand. But I wrote my letter to God as if God was Santa. I was like, dear God, I want this for my birthday. I want an art set. Because I was like, what else does one ask God for? What does God do? God is clearly going to give me a watercolor set.
Okay, well, Air, I have a relic to show you.
Okay, let's see. Okay,
so some, and when we can cut this too, but you two dated.
We did.
We did.
We did.
And you broke up with Jordy.
Yeah, I just loved you so much. I just remember us being like such best friends and like really having each other's backs and like just having a good time together.
And like, isn't that what dating was in those times?
I think so. I think it was just like, I'm your best friend and I think maybe that means I should date you.
Yeah,
something like that.
But I just love you so much that I should date you.
You broke up with Jordy in my room on February 27th, 2005 at 4:12 p.m.
Oh,
and my. I guess you had given her.
Did you cut this bare up?
Oh, yes, I did cut this bare
straight up.
Okay.
Erica.
And took the beads out and then saved it.
And Erica noted also, not just the date, but it was the day of the Academy Awards. Very important information.
You gave this to Jordy on Valentine's Day, this little beanie baby, and then 2 weeks later broke up with her, and I told Jordy to rip the head off the beanie baby, and then I kept it for some weird reason.
Like a weirdo.
And I think one of you, it was probably you, Erica, were like, just so you know, Jordy ripped the head off of the bear or something. Like, I before you held up the thing, I was like, oh, there's a beheaded teddy bear in this bag. Like, that triggered that memory for me.
Oh my gosh, this says so much about me. Like, who am I to be keeping shit like this?
Well, I think it's just funny because when we went to go, like, look in the memories box, it was, like, at the very top of the box. Like, you've held on to this for, like, so many years. You know, like, every so often you go through your stuff and you're like, I can probably part with this.
Yeah, but, like you never had that thought. Yeah.
I feel very connected to this beheaded beanie baby, but there, and then there were memories of kindergarten that we all made recipes, and we have a recipe book, and yours actually was like a real recipe.
Yeah, like, super impressive for a 5-year-old.
Yeah, like you made French toast with
out of challah. Yeah. Oh,
okay, that sounds like my dad. But you gave really like explicit.
You like gave like explicit directions on like fry each side for 5 minutes and like. Whatever. And then there's Erica's, which I'll let her share what she made.
It included 100 heads of romaine lettuce and only served 2 people.
Yeah.
That is so funny. Oh my God.
I know. That- Some of the things are just hilarious. We had to like do a little blast from the past.
Of course. How could we not? Could we not?
It's so funny. I guess like transitioning out of relic days is, I mean, you spoke a little bit to this around how relationships have changed, but I also just wanted to know, like, okay, so you're living in Texas, and I'm just curious how it is as a trans woman living in Texas, and any like grief around your identity and being in a state that is terrible to human rights.
Yeah. That's a really good question. And I get this question like almost all the time. I work for like a national queer public health organization. And I'm the only person in Texas who works for the organization. So we're always like, oh, how's it in? People are like in Mississippi and Alabama. And I'm like, oh, Texas is similar to those places.
Yeah.
So there's been a trajectory. I've been here for almost 5 years. And in that 5 years, trans issues, both like at the state and national levels have kind of like exploded into the consciousness of people who hate trans people. And there was a little bit of a sweet spot where there was like positive messages around trans visibility before all of this like really violent anti-trans stuff started coming up. And it was the like, I think like 1 or 2 years before Trump was elected, there was like, ooh, we get to like be out and like not have to worry too much. And then of course Trump was elected and like really all of that started to change. The feelings I have around it definitely come in waves. And Texas is one of those states that has a legislative cycle every other year. So like 2024, it's like a quiet year for state politics. Last year was really wild. They passed a anti-trans youth healthcare bill. Yeah. There was like anti-DEI bills that were passed. There was like books that were banned. It just like really going back to the Stone Ages. And then at the local level, I'm published in an amicus brief, or quoted in an amicus brief that was filed today, to sue the state of Texas against the implementation of the drag ban. And I talked about how I believe the drag ban is really just a way to police trans people in public, because there's a lot of like very old, like 19th, 20th century stuff around like articles of clothing matching your sex assigned at birth. And, you know, aside from drag entertainers, that like really has implications for trans people.
For sure.
And so there is definitely a lot of grief. And living in Austin is interesting because we're in a very blue bubble.
Right.
But on my way out to all the shows I do, I have to literally pass the Capitol to get there.
Wow.
And so I'm like driving by that building all the time. And then I'm in these like little pockets that are queer havens in these like nightlife venues.
Right, and you have like the backdrop of hate around you in order to get to these safe havens.
Yeah, which is just so, it's so interesting. It's so different than I've ever experienced before. But yeah, it's definitely brought a lot of grief. And it's funny, I was just talking about this with Emmett, but you know, we're in the phase where we're like, okay, do we want to have kids? How do we want to have kids? And he's very steadfast on not wanting to have kids in Texas. Because he, for multiple reasons, one is like, if our kid ends up being trans and they need some sort of healthcare, they can't get it. And he's also, you know, we know that in this next legislative cycle in Texas next year, they are going to try and eliminate trans healthcare rights for adults. And that's already happening on some levels in Texas with Medicaid. But then he's also has concerns around, or we both have concerns around, the state taking kids away from trans parents.
Oh my gosh.
Because they're already trying to qualify parents who provide healthcare for their trans kids as child abusers. And so,
yeah, that's just so insane.
There's tons of levels to this, and it's all bad. And I don't know that I like want to be in Texas forever, but the idea of leaving Texas before we want to, because we might need to, is really hard. And like, it just, aside from the state politics, like, Texas is such a beautiful place. And I have made like beautiful community here, and a lot of Emmett's family lives in Texas. He is was born in Houston, so he has like a lot of ties here, which is how he ended up here. And so having to make that choice just because of fear
Yeah.
Is,
like safety.
Yeah.
For you and like any future children you guys would choose to have.
Yeah.
Well, there's so many layers to it because as you were saying, like making going through the process of transitioning, you also lost relationships. And then there was like the grief on the like interpersonal level, like the individual level. And then there's the societal grief that's placed on you, which is just so terrible. When you say all those things out loud, just adds so many layers and complexities that it's just so sad.
Yeah, it's like there's this whole other set of like fears and like obstacles that you have to overcome just to like be in the same stage of life as your peers. Like family planning, it's like, do we want to or do we not want to? Financial reasons, this reason, you know, it's like you have so many reasons and things to consider, and that does feel really heavy.
Yeah, and I think a lot of my like coming into adulthood was very delayed because I went through a lot of experiences both like mentally and then like biochemically. So like as I was starting hormones, I was going through like puberty, menopause, and pregnancy at a biochemical level, kind of like all at once, all the time. And a lot of that, I was like, oh, this must have been how puberty felt when I was in middle school. And like trans people, we talk about like our second puberty usually happening like in our 20s at some point. But you know, then it also, the gradual shift in hormones and just like the transitions we have to go through both like externally and internally often like are mirror experiences that folks have in adolescence. And so a lot of it is sort of like coming into myself. Like, while, you know, while everyone else is going through, like, career moves and family planning and, like, all those things, I was kind of like, who am I?
Yeah.
So, it just, like, is a whole different set of circumstances.
Yeah, I'm wondering what that was like for you at that time when you saw maybe other, like, your peers going through different life stages. Like, what was that like for you?
It was, I mean, the most close person to me that I sort of watched go through that in like a sort of normative way was my sister. And her story was also pretty unique because she met her now husband when she was 18, which I can't imagine like the person I was at 18.
Yeah.
And what all that was like.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just, you know, it's hard not to do comparison stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just a totally different set of circumstances. And I, you know, also now like a lot of trans folks are going through that process younger because there's language, because there's examples and role models and all of those things. And so, you know, Emmett and I have a cousin who is trans and she lives in Texas and she's 17 and she just like had to go to New York to get medication.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
And she's, I believe, turning 18 next year. So she's like almost out of the legal ramifications of the law. But yeah, she's going through transition now in a very like beautiful way, and it reminds me of the transition I went through, but she's going through it actually in adolescence.
Right.
And
it's
so,
like aligned with that timing.
Right. And I've already seen her sort of start to sink her teeth back into like her passions and her interests and all of that stuff that took me so long to develop because I had that part of my life happened much later.
Do you mind telling us a little bit more about that piece? Like the having to shift away from passions and things that you really love doing to sort of focus all in on becoming who you truly are?
Yeah, a lot of it was just like public life is not set up to accommodate people going through gender transition. Like having to go to the bathroom in public and, you know, leaving the house, all of these things that I now am privileged enough to be able to take for granted. But when I think back on it, or when I hear people's experiences who are more visibly gender nonconforming, remembering my own experiences with like walking out of a bathroom and then someone walking into the bathroom and then looking at the sign, looking at me and not saying anything, but I know they're thinking, was this person in the right place or am I in the right place? We can't both be in the right place.
The like tiny microaggressions.
Yeah. Yeah. And like going through that in the Bay Area in California, where like, I was on public transportation a lot and just like dealing with people a lot and experiencing a lot of my own, you know, going through like prior, like processing a lot of like prior traumas and histories and all of this stuff while going through that. I was just like, I need to know that I'm in a physically safe space. And so I spent a lot of time like either with queer and trans people in queer and trans spaces or in my house, which was at the time all queer and trans people living with us.
Yeah.
It was a lot of like going into my shell or going into my cocoon to like then be able to come back out and like hit the ground running. But during that time, I was also in grad school, and that was horrible. I got dead named at my graduation ceremony at grad school at San Francisco State University. Wow. I would have to
in a city that's so progressive.
Yeah. Yeah. I still have no words to describe like how that could have happened.
Just feels like very dehumanizing.
Yeah. And then like the bathroom situation on campus, and then dealing with, you know, being usually in the education courses I was in, usually being the only like out trans person sort of speaking to these things, when I don't like, I can't speak for all trans people or all trans experiences or the experiences all trans people have in education settings. And so it was a lot of like, how do I bring this up without then turning myself into the expert? Because I want to be in a space of learning and not really getting that. And then...
Right, because you got your master's in, was it public health?
So I got my master's in education, which is, I don't know that I would have repeated that process. Honestly, I was like, I want an MA next to my name for better career opportunities and so more people take me as a trans person seriously. Yeah. But I was like, I do not want to take the GRE. I do not want to take statistics courses. I was like, here's a list of no's. Yeah. what
are my programs? Options I do?
Yeah, exactly. So education is where I ended up. Yeah, it was a lot of that time was like trying to keep myself as like physically and emotionally like safe and secure as possible, which meant sometimes like calling out sick from work a lot.
Yeah.
Trying to like drive myself places that I normally would have taken the bus to. Yeah. Just so I'm like in my own zone more.
Which I'm sure there's a lot of grief around that too. But also one thing you just said was you wanted to get a master's degree. So you had MA, so people took you more seriously.
Yeah. So something that happens with trans people is that for people who medically transition, we often go through a phase of like being really androgynous, which to the outside world can often look like sort of someone being younger than they actually are. And a lot of people who go through gender transition end up, you know, going through a second puberty publicly when they're in their 20s or 30s, mm-hmm. but their voice might crack, or they might have like, you know, grow little chest buds, or just like have certain characteristics that resemble someone who's going through puberty one in teenagehood.
Got it.
But then they're in their 20s and 30s. And so I was very much feeling like, you know, I have been working in education and health settings for a while, but not feeling like I had the respect to like level that up at all. And so, yeah, the master's, I mean, and it's been really helpful up through my career today to have that.
But it's just like kind of shocking to say, right? Like, you had to go through years of postgraduate education to be taken seriously. Like, that's so wild to me.
Right. And it's not like the kind of thing where you need the specific credential to do that type of job. Like, you know, Erica, in order to be a clinical psychologist, she needs to have that PhD, right? It's like you're doing it so that you can like set yourself up for success. And that's really intense, especially because like I'm sure that a lot of people don't have access to be able to go do that.
Oh, totally. So many trans people don't have access to even finish high school, let alone like go through an undergraduate degree, go through a graduate degree. I'm very privileged in that like I was able to rely on like family money for my degrees, not have to take out loans. And I'm very lucky that when I came out as trans, my family didn't like rip that away from me because so many trans people, you know, whether or not they have family money, they have resources in their families for support that are just taken away from them the second they whisper anything about being trans. And so my family really stuck by me, which I am so grateful for. But yeah, without that family support and without, I like started dating my now husband right when I started grad school, like a month apart. And I remember when I started dating him, I had stress hives all over my body from grad school, because grad school has already so stressful.
Yeah.
And I went to the doctor and I was like, okay, my skin is pink and blotchy. Like, what is going on? And he was like, is there anything new in your diet? Are you using new detergent? Are you allergic to shellfish? Are you allergic to this and this? And I was like, no. And he was like, it's probably stress. Like, are you doing anything stressful? And I was like, I just started grad school and transitioning. So yeah, there's some stress going on.
You're like, just living my life is is stressful.
Exactly.
I guess bringing more to the present day is you've been doing a lot of drag, which has been really cool to see. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned when we were talking, or I guess when you and Jordy were talking, around how grief can show up in drag. And I was curious if you could tell us a little bit more about your drag experience and what that's been like.
Yeah, totally. So it's so interesting because so many people start drag on their birthdays or on Halloween or New Year's or like these big joyous, happy celebrations. But my first ever paid drag gig where I was like, on a lineup at a bar was a memorial. Wow. And so around the time I started grad school, through friends, I met my first drag mother, and she was a non-binary person who was also in graduate school who also did drag. And before I transitioned, I kind of thought like mostly around the RuPaul's Drag Race phenomenon was like, oh, drag is a thing that like cis men do and I'm not that, so this isn't for me. And then was introduced to this like non-binary academic drag queen.
Yeah.
Her name is Dr. Aquaria Victoria, which is the scientific name for the glow-in-the-dark jellyfish.
I love that.
And yeah, she was like an integrative biologist, and shortly before she passed away, she ended up passing away by suicide. She had wrote me a note in a book written by a trans poet and was like, I can't wait to be your drag mom and like all of this stuff, and gave it to me for Christmas. And then, yeah, a couple months later, my first like gig was at her memorial service at a bar. And I just remember like the grief of losing someone like that. And I had experienced loss like that in college too. And that type of loss was very traumatic for me. So I was like going through a lot of like, this is the only person I know who mirrors my experiences in certain ways. And so I like need this person, but I don't have this person. And so drag was my way of connecting with them and like feeling their support and their strength. But they never got to see me perform. And they never really got to see me in drag. So drag for me was really born out of processing grief feeling very like my early drag was very, I guess what one considered now like alternative drag, or like had a lot of like horror themes and a lot of like sort of like monstrous alternative pieces to it, because I was really feeling like every time I stepped in public, I was like messing with the whole world, which like as trans people is one of the coolest parts of being trans, is we get to mess with everything. But when you're going through it acutely, it like really sucks.
Very different.
And so yeah, my early drag was very focused on processing through all of those emotions. And then after having my facial surgery and then my breast augmentation, I was like, wait, I get to experience joy? Like,
yeah.
It took me a long time to really get there.
Yeah.
But for a very long time, drag for me was like it never felt like a choice. It was like, I have to be doing this because it's the only way I know how to move through these feelings.
Yeah, it was like an outlet for you, it sounds like.
Yeah.
And I love the way that it connected you to your first drag mother.
Yeah. And now I'm a drag mother and I have 5 drag kids.
Yes.
And they are all incredibly talented and doing such cool things here in Austin. And most of them are also, plus someone else, I also have trans children. And so I'm like taking the kids to their first hormone appointments.
Wow.
And,
wow.
Like that's sitting so in them with the doctor, and like, I'm like, did you do your shot this week? Or like, have you called the pharmacy to make sure they deliver your medication?
Oh, yeah. They're like so lucky pads? To have you.
So lucky.
Yeah, I'm really being able to provide the support for my kids now that like I never felt like I had access to when I was either coming up in drag or like going through sort of like early stages of medical transitioning.
Yeah.
Because yeah, it's such a niche. It's like a niche within a niche.
Yeah.
And so being able to like now speak from authority on it, I'm like, oh wow, like I guess I'm old.
Yeah. You're like, maybe I am a little bit of an expert.
Yeah.
I've been through a lot of lived experience. I love that. It for anyone who's listening that maybe doesn't know what like a drag mother is, do you mind just giving us like a little explanation of what that role is?
Yeah. So I want to credit the documentary Paris is Burning. If you have not seen that movie, it is an incredible movie. It has some problematic origins. I believe it was like made by white lesbians who may or may not have paid the people who are featured in it.
Okay.
But it is an incredible display of the connections people can make in queer nightlife spaces. And that is really where I learned about what a drag mother or a trans mother is, or what they provide. Because again, I think RuPaul's Drag Race is like obviously such a cultural thing right now. But I think that they don't always describe the intricacies of certain things well. And it's like, it's on VH1. And so like, they're not really like, let's talk about community.
Right, let's explore like, all the,
all the but yeah, so a drag mother is someone who just provides support to folks who are younger than them or who are newer to drag than them in the scene. And so a lot of times drag mothers will like teach someone how to do their drag makeup or help someone put an outfit together or help someone with their looks or their numbers or help like figure out ways, because drag is also, it's like, it's an art and it's also a business and an industry,
right
yeah.
And so much of navigating drag in 2024 is like navigating the like interpersonal complexities of like, how do I get booked, how do I ask for bookings, what do I say when someone wants to book me, like do I ask how much something is gonna pay, like and so navigating a lot of that stuff.
It's a lot of mentorship.
Yeah
it's definitely a lot of mentorship. And with only one of my drag kids did I ever like teach them the skills of painting their face. The rest of them were already in the drag scene when I adopted them.
Got it.
Yeah.
But one of them, we were friends first, and they were like, I think I want to do drag. And I was like, okay, then sit down and this is what we're doing.
I got you.
And yeah, that person who I like taught how to paint their face is also, is one of my best friends. They like, I always say this when I'm introducing them. They zipped me into my wedding dress on the day of my wedding. They came with me to the appointments where the tailor has to like teach you how to like,
that's so sweet.
Do all the things. And so, I am their mother in those ways. I never take credit for their talent because a lot of them have talents that I do not have. Some of them can do the splits, which I cannot do.
Wow.
That's impressive. Very impressive.
Some of them, can sing, which I sing live, which I cannot do. Yeah, a lot of them just like are teaching themselves things, and we have a group chat and we get together for family dinners and
so sweet.
We fight any one person's bullies become all of our bullies.
Yeah,
and we
sort of like so special.
Are just like navigating the scene together.
I love that. It sounds like you've created such a beautiful community, and I'm curious. We've sort of made this a staple of our show now to ask our guests, if you could talk to Era like in the thick of it, perhaps it's that stage in your 20s that you don't want to revisit or whatever that like deepest, darkest moment was for you, with the person who you are now, what would you want her to know? What would you want to say to her?
So I do this in therapy a lot. And my therapist calls it parts work. And I don't know if y'all are familiar with that terminology.
Yeah.
But parts work has really like changed my whole relationship with my younger self. And a lot of the work that trans people have to do is sort of like reparenting themselves or like integrating the person they are now with their baby self. And it's so funny because the last time I did this parts work, for some reason, the self I conjured in that moment that I needed to talk to was walking home from middle school.
Wow.
And like in this visualization was like walking myself home from middle school.
Aww.
But I think I would affirm a lot of my choices to like seek safety and community. I would be like, you're doing that and you're doing that well. I think I would want to tell myself to trust the process of transition, and that I felt a lot of anxiety when I was in the early stages of like, where am I going to end up? And yeah. I felt like I didn't have answers to a lot of people's questions. Mm-hmm. And that gave me a lot of strife and anxiety and confusion. And so I would want to say just like, don't worry about what other people are asking you or what other people have to say about your journey. Just like, live in the moment and make the choices you need to make for yourself. And the people who matter will get the answers in the timing that works for them. Yeah. And like, don't rush your own process to give someone an answer about who you are if you don't have that answer yet.
I love that answer. And I honestly, as someone who's recently been diagnosed with cancer, what you're saying, obviously we're in completely different situations, but what you're saying really resonates with me because I have very few answers and people have a lot of questions. And sometimes it can make you feel anxious because they're looking to you as like an expert and like you're asking things of people and then you don't have answers to provide. And that can feel like, it can just really like rock your self-esteem, I think. And so I appreciate you sharing that.
Yeah. I mean, I think the similarities are definitely there. And I mean, I think the biggest one is like, you're going through a new sense of selfhood mm-hmm. and people are like, tell me about it. And you're right. Like, I'm so much in it. I don't know what to say.
Totally.
And yeah, I think like socioculturally, we like don't know how to interact with people who are going through a new phase of life, no matter what that phase is. And so, yeah, I appreciate that.
Yeah, of course. And I have one other question. For someone who's maybe listening to this and they have someone in their life who's transitioning, what would you want to share with them that could like be helpful, be encouraging, be supportive, as a friend or a loved one or a parent? Like what do they need to hear?
I think just like showing up in the ways that you're being asked to show up, and again, not rushing someone into an understanding of themselves, but just like, if someone tells you their name and pronouns, just do whatever you can to respect that. Do some of your own learning. There are tons of books and like web articles about this, about just like how to respond respectfully and lovingly to someone who is coming out as trans.
Yeah.
I always say, like, if someone's coming out to you as trans, you should see it as a sign of trust, that they like trust you yeah. with that information.
Yeah.
And acknowledge that it is a really brave thing to do. So try and like, you know, thank that person for being vulnerable, because it's a super vulnerable conversation, especially in those early years. And just like keep checking in with people and being like, last time we talked, you said you were good. How are you doing now? Are you still good? Helping someone find resources they might not have. And yeah, I the last thing I'll say to that is like, not expecting that person to always be your teacher.
Sure.
In it.
Right.
So like trying to totally. Do some of your own learning around like, what does this kind of support typically
look like? Yeah, like taking accountability to
yeah.
do that.
Yeah, exactly. And sort of taking the education into your own hands and, you know, showing up for a friend or a loved one the way anyone would show up for any friend or loved
right.
one.
Right, of course.
And,
like, you would put in that effort. Yeah, you would exactly. put in that effort to understand someone's experience, no matter what that experience is.
Exactly.
Well, thanks for sharing that. And this has just been like so wonderful.
So
I'm
fun.
Glad that we got to connect in this way. And
me too.
Can you just share where people can find you? And we'll also put your details in if you want to be found.
Yeah. I am on Instagram at the trans era. And I always, when I'm on the microphone at shows, like to do a little dig at Texas public schools about spelling, the spelling of things. But yeah, it is THETRANSERA. And that is my Instagram. That is where I post all of the things, all of the educational resources I have on coming out as trans, how to support coming out, someone coming out as trans. I put a lot of my drag content on there and just share about the different triumphs and tribulations of my life. So that is where to find me.
Thank you so much. And I hope we can connect again and not take another decade or so.
Yeah, I know.
Yes, yes.
Because I feel like I could talk to you for so long. I have so many things I know. I'm know like, and ask. But I know, I'm like sad. We're at our time. But yeah, maybe you'll come back.
I would love to.
A little part two.
Yeah.
This part always feels the most awkward. Yeah, the transition
is like the most awkward after.
So that was a really, really wonderful talk with Era. And I just got so much insight into her life because we were disconnected for so many years. And I feel like so much of that time, we were able to understand what was going on for her.
Yeah.
And I was just feeling all of the different feels around our relationship with her, how we got disconnected, to know that like it was so sweet when she said that she found that letter that you wrote. It was like so beautiful.
It made me happy. It was like, oh, like I was like a nice supportive person. And yeah, that you just like never know how you were going to be when you were little. And to know that I was like, I knew. And like, yeah, I feel grateful that she was willing to share that with us, because it kind of put to rest any doubts that I had about like the way that I behaved in that relationship,
which was hard because and she spoke about this, that she was questioning her sexuality, and that's what we knew at the time. And then years later, going through the process of transitioning and questioning her gender, that was something that we weren't a part of. So to get insight into her internal world was just really special, and to know that you inherently were that supportive figure from early on was just really great.
I know, it was really a sweet moment, and I just learned a lot about her experience navigating the world and how it's like just not set up for someone who's going through a transition, you know, just that she was worried about safety, worried about being taken seriously, like all of these extra layers that other people don't have to worry about, like she has to take into like real consideration. And family planning, and like the state possibly taking kids away from trans parents, like just so many really big major things that could impact your life and your future children's lives that I had never even thought about before. So I was so glad that we got to talk to her so that I could learn more and like broaden my world view, and really have more of an understanding for the trans experience.
Well, even the thing that she was saying around finding community in Texas, in a state that really doesn't support her, like she is driving between drag shows and between her house and the drag show. There's just that whole drive. You see signs and you see cities of people who don't accept you, and which is so terrible. And then there's the beauty in like her accepting herself and leaning into herself. She's able to find community within that.
Yeah.
And then give that community to others.
Yeah.
It's just really heartbreaking and beautiful.
It was. And I really loved hearing about the relationship that she had with her first drag mother, and how she was able to like process a lot of her grief through her drag artistry, and was then able to share the joy of that with these other people in the community that are maybe newer to the community or haven't done drag before, and to just sort of like take them under her wing and provide that same service to them that she got from her first drag mother. I thought it was such a nice full circle experience. And so, yeah, I just felt so
grateful to talk with her. And I remember when we first decided we were going to do this podcast, she was like one of the first people that we were like, oh, let's see if Era would be down. Yeah. And I didn't know if she would actually want to do it, but she was so into it, willing. And I was just so grateful for that. And so, yeah, if you guys have any questions for Era, if you have any thoughts or feedback on some of the topics we discussed, we'd love to hear from you in the comments. And we can maybe bring Era back for part two.
Yeah, we hope that you love this episode as much as we did. And if you want to learn more about Era, see what she's up to, see more about her drag shows, then you can follow her at The Trans Era
on Instagram. And and one more thing. Okay. I just got a call out. How about that cut up teddy bear?
Okay. Yeah, Jordy.
Yeah, what about that cut up teddy bear, Erica?
I don't recall.
Like, how did
I plead the fifth?
I just think it's funny because Erin knew that you were about to bring out a decapitated
Beanie Baby. Which is so concerning to me.
Just hilarious to me that, like,
is it hilarious to you? Because it's not hilarious.
It's funny to me because it's like over the years, you know, like we all keep things, we hold on to things, you know,
like what?
And then every so often we go through the things and we say, you know, probably don't need to keep that anymore. This was right at the top of your box, right at the top.
It was waiting to be opened.
It was like you had clearly seen it many times and you were just like, yep, that's staying. And I just want to note that that's an interesting choice.
And if you were to ask me why, I'm asking myself that ever since I found it. I pulled out this memory box before this episode to find some memorabilia that I think would be really, because I thought I was going to find notes because we used to pass
so many notes in class.
And I didn't find that many notes between the three of us, but I did find a beheaded Beanie Baby.
Yeah. So just wanted to, you know, shine a light on that.
Thank you so much.
Love you.
Yeah, love you too. Bye.
Bye. Thanks so much for listening to Grief Street. We put out new episodes every Monday. If you'd like to support us, give us a follow on Instagram and TikTok. Also, subscribe to our YouTube channel to find the video version of our episodes. Please subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts and give us a 5-star review. We would love to hear from you and get some feedback. If you'd like to contact us, please email griefstreetpodcast@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 508-474-3378. That's 508 GRIEFST. Our theme song is Hepcat Jive, courtesy of purpleplanet.com. We'll see you next time.